Good afternoon, everybody. Shmuel Platzer coming at you live from West Rogers Park in Chicago. Delighted that people are calling in. They want to hear a little bit of Torah before the holiday begins. This is book club class. We meet weekly, and we're doing Nefesh HaChaim, Rechaim Volozhiner's classic exploration of the fundamentals of Jewish belief. Now he's going to explore the notion of Hamakom, that the Almighty is the place. And he'll also take a little swipe at Chassidut. And we'll see how he does that in a very quiet way. He'll take a little swipe at them. Let's see if we can go through the entire gate within the hour. It shouldn't take us that long. Gate 3, Chapter 1. Hamakom. God is the place of the world. The Mishnah in Avos, Chapter 2, Mishnah 18 says, when you pray, do not make your prayer a set routine, but rather beg for compassion and favor before Hamakom, translated meaning the omnipresent, the one who's everywhere. Literally, Hamakom, the place, blessed be he. In using the divine name of Hamakom, the sages hinted at an important concept. Their profound intentions in choosing the name Hamakom must be explained, and the verses that allude to this must be clarified. The Mishnah in Avos, Chapter 2, Mishnah 15, compares the words of the sages. Glowing coal. A glowing coal merely glimmers, but the more you stir it and fan it, the more its flames flare up. Didn't we see that just now? We're doing beer chametz at my brother-in-law Ben's, and he was tossing lighter fluid and other stuff on top of the coals. And so the more you stir those coals and fan them, the more their flame flares up, and the more you can enjoy its light and bask in its warmth, but only from a distance. You can't touch it, and if you're not careful, you'll get burned. The same applies to the words of the sages. At first glance, they appear short and simple, but in reality, they are, quote, like a hammer that shatters a rock. See Jeremiah chapter 23. The deeper one delves into their words, examining and analyzing them, the more his eyes light up with the dazzling, blazing light of the wisdom that's evident in the profound concepts he discovers. As the sages say in Avos chapter 5, delve into the Torah and continue to delve into it, for it contains everything. But one has to be very cautious not to get too close to their glowing coal, which is to say, not to contemplate and reflect on things that we're not permitted to scrutinize too deeply. As the Mishnah also in Avos chapter 2 puts it, warm yourself by the fire of the sages. Top page 108. This means, don't turn away completely from pondering the rabbi's words, for then you will not benefit from their wisdom at all. On the other hand, don't get too close so that you will not be burnt. Stay at a safe distance, as the Mishnah continues. Beware of their glowing coal, lest you be burned. The same holds true for the word makom. Everyone knows that its plain meaning is place or space. When we reflect on it, we discover that by choosing this appellation, the sages hinted at an important idea. The reason for calling Hashem Hamakom, the place, is explained by the rabbis in Bereishis Rabbah 68 and Tanchuma Nishmas in connection with the pasuk that Yaakov came Bamakom. He came to a familiar place. See Genesis 28. Talmud asks, why is the Holy One blessed be? Why is he given by name of Makom, place? Because he is the Makom. He is the place of the world, but the world is not his place. Meaning he fills the whole wide world up, but the wide world does not fill up God. Commenting on the pasuk, behold, there is a place with me. That's in Exodus 33, verse 21. The magician Shmos Rabbah says, that the Almighty says, place of the world is dependent on me, but I am not dependent on the place of the world. Behold, there is a place with me. So the Midrash says that God says, the place of the world is dependent on me, but I, God, I'm not dependent on the place of the world. The simple meaning of this remark is that just as the place supports an object standing on it, so is the Almighty the place that supports and sustains the worlds and all creations. If God forbid, God would remove his attention from creation for an instant, all the worlds would cease to exist. As it says, you are keeping them all alive, You see that in Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 6. This is the cornerstone of the Jewish faith. And for this reason, the Zohar describes God as, quote, the soul of all souls. Because just as the soul animates and sustains the body, so too God animates and sustains the worlds. In the same vein, the Talmud in Sanhedrin 91b says, can a piece of meat remain for even 3 days without salt and not become spoiled? It is God who gives life to the body and to all the worlds. Meaning, if our bodies did not have the Almighty animating us, personally attending to us, putting a soul into us, we'd be like a chunk of meat. Could it last even for 3 days without salt? Of course not. We all would have gone very spoiled. We all would have become verfallen and spoiled. Verschimmelt. We would have become verschimmelt. Yiddish term for spoiled. If not for the Almighty giving us a soul. It is God who gives life to the body and to all the worlds. Top page 109. Similarly, the Talmud in Brachos 10a draws a parallel between the existence of the universe through God's power and the existence of the body through the power of the soul, stating as follows. Just as God nourishes the whole world, the Holy One, blessed be He, nourishes the whole world, so does the soul nourish the body. This is the simple meaning of the concept of God being, quote, the place of the world. Chapter 2. The world endures by the will of Hashem. On a deeper level, the description of God as the place of the world is based on a very profound concept. The fact that God is called the place of the world has nothing to do with a place supporting the object that rests on it. For in that case, the object has an independent existence. The place in which it stands merely prevents it from falling and breaking. The same goes for the body being kept alive by the soul. The body has an independent existence. It does not cease to exist when the soul departs. Because the body, when the soul departs, still is a body and has to get buried, but it still exists. By contrast, the continued existence of all the worlds depends completely on God. If He would cease to will their existence, if God would cease, would stop willing their continued existence, the worlds would revert to absolute nothingness in an instant. That's why the sages chose to call Hashem by the name of Makom. Hashem, in His wisdom, chose to make the constant existence of His world dependent on His will. It is beyond human comprehension that all the worlds in reality are non-existent and merely an illusion, if not for the fact that constantly they are kept in existence by the will of God. Top page 110. Therefore, in an attempt to clarify this paradox, the sages gave God the name, the byname Makom. They meant to explain that Hashem, in His wisdom, decides to keep the world in existence every single moment. This is something even the wisest man cannot grasp, because to the human mind, it seems that the world continues to exist independent of God's will. By calling Hashem Makom, the sages intimated that just as an object, even though it may exist independently, cannot exist without a place on which to stand, so too, the tangible universe, which seems to exist independently, has a place on which it stands. Its place is God. If not for Hashem's will to be the place for the worlds, the universe most certainly would be non-existent. Chapter 3. A word of caution. Watch this. This idea is expressed in the Pasuk, Jeremiah 23. Do I not fill heaven and earth? And most explicitly in Devarim, chapter 4, realize it today that Hashem is the supreme being in heaven above and on the earth below. There's nothing else. And also in Devarim, Deuteronomy 4, you are the ones who have been shown, so that you will know that God is the supreme being and there is none else beside Him. End quote. This means literally that there is nothing in existence in all the worlds except God's absolute oneness. We mentioned at the outset that the words of the sages are compared to, quote, glowing coal. One should take care not to ponder and reflect excessively on subjects that should not be studied in depth, for it may be harmful. Top 113. The subject of Kabbalah is meant only for a wise man. who is capable of understanding it and will be inspired by it to pray with a pure heart. But delving deeply into Kabbalah is fraught with danger, as Sefer Yetzirah cautions. If your heart runs forward, go back to your place. I really should have restrained myself from discussing this topic altogether, says Reb Chaim Volozhiner. The early authorities made it a point to conceal it, like the Holy Rokeach, who only spoke about Kabbalah in allusions and hidden references. On reflection, I concluded that their approach was the appropriate course to follow for their generation. But at the present time, we have not had a leading authority for a long time, and everyone lets his thoughts wander in whatever directions he pleases. What's worse, some people think that Kabbalah is for everyone, and there are fools who say that pure godliness can be found everywhere and in everything. All their thoughts are focused on studying mysticism. Even young boys are behaving according to their own understanding. Very clearly a swipe at Chassidut. It is as clear as day he's taking a big stab at the nascent Hasidic movement.
They're
into Kabbalah.
They teach everyone Kabbalah.
Right. Some people think Kabbalah is for everyone, and there are fools who say that pure godliness can be found everywhere and in everything, like in a leaf, in a tree. There were rebels who were saying, you see that leaf? That leaf is filled with, like, you know, godliness, whatever. Okay, all their thoughts are focused on studying mysticism. Even young boys are behaving according to their own understanding. How extremely careful one must be not to be swayed by such thoughts. One must guard himself against acting on the basis of mystical ideas, for this will do away with many fundamental principles of the Torah. One may easily become entangled in the snares of the Yetzer Hara. For example, it may convince him that it's permitted to meditate on the Torah in dirty alleyways, thinking that Hashem is present in all places. Yet our sages spoke out emphatically against this, declaring that such a person does not have a share in the world to come. The Gemara in Brachos 24b says that a person who meditates on the Torah in dirty places, quote, has denigrated Hashem's word. See Numbers chapter 15. And the verse ends, quote, that person shall be utterly cut off, which is interpreted to mean being cut off both in this world and in the world to come. There are many more errors that can result from following this way. These are the considerations that led me to discuss this topic. I want to caution people to avoid the errors that may result from it, and I want them to understand clearly the things the sages alluded to. Eslas es Lashem, because it is a time to act for God. See Psalm 119. Chapter 4. Hashem fills and surrounds all the world. Now, the beginning of this chapter has been omitted in translation because it deals with profound Kabbalistic concept. It says in many places in the Zohar that, quote, Hashem fills all worlds and, quote, surrounds all worlds. This means that from Hashem's perspective, he fills all worlds. And we, from our Torah-oriented vantage point, see Hashem as surrounding all worlds. The meaning of the concept of Hashem filling all worlds is concealed from us. The truth is that from Hashem's perspective, even after creating the world, he fills all the worlds and all existence. Literally, quote, there is nothing else beside him. Deuteronomy 4. We expressed this thought before our Shacharis prayer. It was you before the world was created. It is you since the world was created. This means that even after the worlds were created, Hashem is eternal and unchanging, unaffected by time or place. Excuse me. He is the same now as before creation, when all was filled by his infinite oneness, filling also the space where the worlds are now. Let's just try to understand that. See the galaxies in the universe that seems to go on and on and on forever? Well, the Almighty had to be Mitzamtzen himself. We hear here in the Kabbalistic literature, he shortened himself ever so slightly. He made a little bit of room for the ongoing galaxies and universes. So just try to picture the amount of light years that it takes to go from where we are to the ends of the galaxy, wherever that may be. And the Almighty fills all that and extends well beyond that. It's impossible to understand him. It's impossible to understand the God of Israel and how great he is and how big he is, that his oneness fills not just the small little puny universes that are millions of light years wide. Forget that. Hashem extends all beyond that. Impossible. Simply impossible to understand it. We try our best. We say about Hashem that it was you before the world was created. It's you since the world was created. This means that even after the worlds were created, God is eternal and unchanging, unaffected by time or place. He is the same now as before creation, when all was filled by his infinite oneness, filling also the space where the worlds are now. The sages had this in mind when they compared the connection between God and the worlds with the bond between the soul and the body, saying, just as the pure soul resides within the body, so is the Almighty, the Holy One, blessed be He, is pure in His world. That's what you could write before. They meant to say, although the soul pervades all parts of the human body, both the clean ones and the foul and unclean ones, the soul itself remains immaculately pure and holy. So too, God, although He fills all worlds, even their clean and unclean places, His sanctity and oneness are unaffected by them. As it says, for I, Hashem, have not changed. Pasuk in Malachi, chapter 3. Chapter 5, Hashem is the soul of the world. God in His awesome power withdrew into Himself. He made room, so to speak, for the world and creations to emerge into separate existence in different places, some holy and pure, others impure and soiled. We, from the human point of view, perceive with our senses what appears to be the real world. The laws governing our conduct commanded by God are based on this perception of ours. And with this perception, the sages compared God's relationship with the world to the relationship of the soul to the body. Indeed, the Zohar says, Hashem is the soul of the world. With his senses, man perceives only his body, whereas the soul, although it pervades the entire body, is invisible to the human eye and is evident only to the intellect. Similarly, we perceive the physical world and its creatures with our senses, whereas God, who is present in all the limbs and organs of the body and who, like the soul, imparts life to them, is hidden from our eye. Now, on the one hand, he railed against the Hasidic movement for believing that Hashem is found in like dirty places. At the same time, he's acknowledging that Hashem fills every single organ in the human body and that there are even other places here on earth. He himself says so. You know, places that are not so fabulous, but clearly Hashem fills them. So the soul itself remains, you know, pure and holy, but the clean ones and the foul and unclean ones, and God fills all the worlds, even their clean and unclean places. Earlier, he was critical of people who believe that. Earlier, he was critical of the Hasidim who were saying that the Almighty is to be found in the clean and the unclean places. But even Chaim Volozhiner seems to admit that that's the case. I'm not sure exactly why he should be so critical. He's not supposed to daven in the smelly place. I get that. I mean, of course. But it seems like even Chaim, you know, Volozhiner is admitting that the Almighty fills every single bit of the world. All the divine names and attributes mentioned in the Torah apply to Hashem only as we conceive of Him, quote, from our perspective, as it were, from the human point of view, whereby the worlds are affirmed in their reality and separateness. Not always is God described as one who fills the entire world. The Midrash in Bereshis Rabbah says, when Hashem wills it, do I not fill the heaven and earth? See Jeremiah 23. And if He so wishes, God can confine Himself to the smallest of places, for it states that God spoke to Moshe from between the two Kruvim. Thank you, Rabbi. Ezra B'Chanina says, sometimes the entire world cannot contain His glory and divinity, but other times He can speak with a man from among the hairs of his head. Chapter 6. Do not delve into hidden things. We're almost done. We are literally almost done with this gate. This is the last chapter. Do not delve into hidden things. All the fundamentals of the Torah, all positive and negative mitzvos, are based on the concept that from our perspective in the physical world, there definitely are different places. In places that are clean, we are allowed, even obligated, to meditate on Torah themes. Whereas in unclean places, it's forbidden to think about Torah subjects. Indeed, all the divine commandments regulating our conduct are predicated on the human perspective of existence. Without this human outlook, there's no reason at all for the Torah and the mitzvot. From Hashem's point of view, He fills all the worlds uniformly, without any separation or differentiation. There's only complete oneness, exactly as before creation. But we are unable, and even forbidden, to attempt to understand this awesome concept as to how God's presence fills all existence with undivided absolute oneness. As the Rokeach expresses it, do not delve into things that are beyond your comprehension. For it says in the Brisa, restrain your mouth from talking about this. But if your heart runs, return to the place, for that is the reason that it says in Ezekiel chapter 1, and the angels run and return. The chayos run and return. This means if you reflect on the essence of the Creator, wondering about His omnipresence, prevent your mouth from talking and your mind from contemplating. Banish such thoughts from your mind. But if your heart runs after such thoughts, be quick to stop thinking about these things. Go back to praying to Hashem and be in awe of God. The greatest sages cannot understand these matters. The heavenly legions of angels ask, where is the place of His glory? Ayem ekom kivodo. They cannot grasp the concept of Hashem being hamakom, the place of the world. The Talmud in Chagiga 13b says, since the angels say, blessed is the glory of Hashem from His place, Ezekiel 3, we can infer that no one knows His place. Moshe, eager to understand this concept, said, please let me comprehend your unique nature. Exodus chapter 33. Moshe desired to understand the place of Hashem's glory, but his request was not granted. Only Hashem Himself knows the essence of this hidden and unfathomable idea. It says, the hidden things are for Hashem our God. Deuteronomy 29. By the way, if Moshe came up with that idea, that the hidden things are for Hashem our God, and only for God, then why was he asking, let me comprehend your unique nature? Is that a question or what?
I think it is. In his place in the Beis HaMikdash?
Well, a small little place, but up in heaven, we have no idea where.
Well, it's like directly. The Mikdash isn't that.
I'm trying to understand God's heavenly abode. It says, the hidden things of Hashem are God. Deuteronomy 29. We are permitted to reflect only on the things that were revealed and which we are able to grasp as seen from our vantage point where Hashem, quote, surrounds all the worlds, which is He transcends the world and is outside the world because He confined His glory, making room, so to speak, for the physical world to come into existence with its forces and new creatures. Therefore, it's our duty to know and firmly etch in our consciousness the reality of creation as it relates to the halacha. This is the foundation of our faith and the basis of the Torah and all the mitzvot. The remaining chapters of Day 3 deal with Kabbalistic and mystical themes that do not lend themselves to translation. And that's it. That was gate number 3. Told you it was going to be fairly painless. God willing, when we get to Gate 4 in a couple of weeks after the Yom Tov, that is, of course, the famous gate. It's a prologue to, there's going to be a prologue to Gate 4, all about the importance of Limud HaTorah, which is where many guys begin the study of the book. But I'm glad that we've been doing it in order, because that's the way that Chaim Volozhin taught it and wrote it. So I think we did a good job of that. I wish everybody a very good Yom Tov, a Chakash of a Sameach. Thank you so much, everybody, for coming out. Barry, thank you for calling in. Everybody's going to hear on the other side, on the flip side. And we thank Jake Wyman and Mitch Green of Sheer Enjoyment. We thank the Gulfman Synagogue and our School of Jewish Studies for making this all possible and available. Wishing everybody a most joyous, kosher, and happy, successful, and uplifting Pesach. Enjoy your Sedarim with your family, your friends, and your neighbors. Enjoy every bit of it. Zayis Gesund. And with God's help, we'll see everybody on Chol HaMoed Friday morning. We'll continue with Moed Katan at 10:30 New York time and 9:30 Chicago time. Wishing everybody a good Yom Tov. We'll see you, God willing, Chol HaMoed Friday morning for Intro to Talmud 101. Continuing Moed Katan, we're now on 24B. Take care and be well, everybody. Have a great Yom Tov. All the best. Bye-bye now.